I once had the privilege of watching a weaver at work. Somehow she managed to bring from the chaotic jumble of multicoloured threads some kind of order and pattern. One minute anarchy, the next it all came together as a coherent whole, a thing of loveliness, marvellous to watch. The writer of John's Gospel has that same skill. Every passage is charged with subtle significance and overlaid with meaning. Hints are given, little indications of a truth here or a rare insight there. Clues are left like little tiny time bombs of truth ticking away as his gospel unfolds towards its majestic climax in the death and resurrection of Jesus. Take his account of the incident in the temple, an event so shocking it's hard for us to imagine its impact. The waves of horror and revulsion as the young stranger storms into the sacred temple, drives out the cattle, turns over the tables. The crazed squawking of hens, the crash of falling tables, screams of panic, chaos. Who is this madman? Get security! An act of apparent vandalism that sent tremors of horror through the souls of the devout. Imagine a Buckingham Palace garden party were disrupted by a crazed gang of Hell's Angels. Guests clutching their cucumber sandwiches in shocked disbelief, wondering what the world was coming to. If the incident occurred, as John has it, at the beginning of the ministry of Jesus, it was an act designed to outrage, daring, headline-making, setting the whole city buzzing, a gesture, a statement of prophetic power that revealed much about the character of this Jesus, his vision and his loyalties. It reveals for sure his capacity for holy anger. So sensitive was his spirituality, so real was his relationship with his Father, he could not bear to see the holy place turned into a shopping arcade. A place dedicated to prayer and devotion, sacred, consecrated and holy, had been allowed to degenerate into a supermarket full of religious gewgaws. The rabble of commerce and the commodification of religion, drowning out the possibility of prayerfulness. There was something inappropriate, and Jesus' response to it was not at all the priggish tut-tutting of the self-righteous, which is often the case when we react in private disapproval, but a genuine, fervent sense of devotion to this holy place that was being made a mockery of, a house of prayer, become a den of thieves. All this comes out of his easy and natural relationship of closeness and sonship with his Father. The brashness of the temple was an insult, not to some vague notion of divine holiness, but an insult to someone he knows and loves. My Father made this a place of prayer, and you've turned it into this? Expressing the natural outrage of a son defending his father's interests. But as much as anything, the incident in the temple reminds us of the strength of Jesus, his strength of character and his sheer physical presence. We cannot, as we see the great tables of the money changers crash to the ground, reconcile the young man, white with sorrow, disappointment and anger, who sends them toppling. We cannot reconcile that image with the shrinking violet of popular Victorian Christianity, with its harmless lily-white Jesus looking like a pre-Raphaelite consumptive, clutching a dewy-eyed lamb to his gentle bosom. Not so much. There is hard-muscled strength here, and physical courage too. Not a harmless wet walk, but a passionate young man burning with fiery conviction. I imagine that at various times we've all felt the urge to make our protest. More often than not, perhaps, we've kept silent, whether it's faced by a bunch of noisy, sweary lads on a train, or one of the many causes that call for our loyalty, our committed action. But we often lack the courage to make a stand, make our gesture, say our piece, stand up and be counted on the side of truth. For what terrible repercussions there would be for Jesus because of his challenge to the establishment. He was a marked man now. They would never forget him and they would never forgive him because they knew in their hearts that he was right in his challenge to their abuses, their vested interests. No, they would have him for this one day, eventually. Yet, knowing this, he did not keep silent. The dramatic disruption to the temple has a lot to say to us even 2,000 years later. It reminds us, though we may not wish to be reminded, that there can be no automatic, unthinking transfer of the methods and values of the marketplace into the practice of the church. No unthinking, automatic transfer of the methods and values of the marketplace into the practice of the church. There is something fundamentally inappropriate about commercial values being adopted wholesale in the way in which the church goes about its business. We can't assume that we can organise the church and order its finances on the same basis as the golf club or the football club. We need to think in a different way, use a different gear. This is not to be overly pietistic, idealistic or naive, simply to acknowledge that some ways of thinking just don't fit who we are and what we do and how we do it. Which is why, for example, some people found themselves uneasy when the great cathedrals began to put shops into their interior with a view to increasing income to help with upkeep, but at the same time generating anxieties among some that as the postcards and the tea towels and the fridge magnets began to sell, the house of prayer might lose its character in the process. The ringing of the tills. The temple in Jerusalem was built in love and sustained by devotion to God. If it couldn't survive on that basis, if it had to go commercial in order to function, something seriously had gone wrong, got lost, been forgotten along the way. Devotion to God is what sustains the church. And if there's not enough of that to go around, not enough of that love and devotion, then that is the question that needs to be answered. Why? The Church of Scotland is not Heart of Midlothian Football Club or Manchester United Football Club. It cannot, without devastating loss of direction and identity, simply adopt the methods the football club might use to raise the resources it needs. The resources must be found in the hearts of the people, be provided as an expression of our zeal and faithfulness. The Jesus of the temple is no limp, innocuous non-entity who would allow us to embrace our comfortable religion and leave us without questions to answer. He comes disruptive and dangerous. He comes to our life and our church with force and challenged, not encased in stained glass, but right there at the church door, right there at our heart's door, reminding us that it is his Father's home and we must honour him. Amen.